Hello and welcome to another edition of the End Zone Podcast. My name is Eric Jensen, and as always, I am joined by my co-host Christian Castain. And returning from minor car issues that could have cost him his life, John Butler. John, we were quite worried about you. Dire life straits. Can you tell us a little bit about why you missed the last show?
It's just some car issues that I've had to run between my dealership and my house and dealing with everything. So, simple enough. Something we all kind of deal with.
But you're physically all right. You're not to die.
No, there's no issues there.
Oh, all right. What kind of car issue was it, out of curiosity?
It had been making like a rubbing noise for a while, so I wanted to find out what it was. It was something with my steering column, so.
Good for us. We are a bunch of macho men here. We do not know, at least I do not know anything about automotive places, things, or anything at all. So,
Hashtag stick to sports.
Bro. Anyways, let's get right into it. There's a lot to talk about week two. None of the games, again, I got a little bit of a beef with the NFL schedule makers. You wonder why your ratings are kind of bad sometimes, why you're not drawing in a new audience. These first 4 weeks of games, like, the next two look blah. They're like maybe 5-4 this week. And the fact that there have only been like two or three really great games so far this year, and one of them was or is that just me?
I feel you on that. I think a lot of it, though, too, is we're seeing some bad quarterbacking, and that's something that's been an issue in the NFL for a while. Just the fact that we haven't seen a lot of college quarterbacks come out and succeed right away. For example, Carson Wentz, Jared Goff, and I mean, we're seeing Deshaun Watson kind of grow into his own now. But even at the same time, these guys aren't physically ready all the time because these colleges are running their own system. They're not trying to teach them how to read defenses. It's one read offenses.
Well, I would tell you to cut the brakes because we're only 2 weeks into the season. We've seen several good games. Just because it's not a close game, say it's within 10 points, doesn't mean it was a bad football game. Like, for example, the Bears-Bills game, it was close, but that doesn't mean it was a good football game.
Right. Bears.
No, wait. Falcons and the Buccaneers so far.
Right, Panthers Bills is what you mean, right, Chris?
Yeah, that's what I said. Bears.
Oh.
Bills Panthers is what I
meant. Yeah, you said Bears in there.
Let me tell you, as the ambassador for people who care about kickers, Graham Gano actually carried his team to a victory in that game. 3 field goals, the only 9 points for the team. So good for Graham Gano. Good for Graham Gano. We haven't had John on for a little bit, so might as well just give you guys a kicker league update really quick. I am 0-2 in the league, which is sad since I'm the proponent of it. John thoroughly whipped me in week one, and I think I did win this week, but it was
no,
definitely
you lost this week. You lost.
No, I lost. You're right. I only won. I was winning all my games at the end of Sunday. And lost all my leagues after Monday night's game. So I'm a little bit annoyed by that. I won't lie to you. John, you got Giorgio Tavecchio, my favorite kicker in the league off waiver wires. Very disappointed in that. I think it's BS how our league waivers work. That should be by records, so worst team can get the picks.
Well, I would say that I have 3 bottom tier kickers and then 2-0, and I can't even get into my account. So I would, y'all will be playing the same kickers all season long, so you should get a win then.
Well, none of yours are hurt, so that's the positive part.
Oh, yeah?
Do you have a hurt kicker?
I did. I had Caleb Sturgis. He injured his quad, I believe. He hurt it that first week. Well, that's why I picked up Tavecchio, which he's actually one of my favorite stories this year. As weird as it is for a kicker, he's a 27-year-old who had been trying out for different teams over and over and over. And the fact he got this chance because Sebastian Janikowski went on IR, and he had himself a day that first week. He had he just absolutely carried that team that week in week one against the Titans, hit 250-yard field goals, and he's been a really great story for the NFL that not a lot of people pay attention to. But because he's a kicker. But the simple fact is, he's a 27-year-old who's been busting his ass to try and get his chance, and he's gotten it this year, which has been fun.
Yeah, I was very surprised. I'm quite honestly shocked that Sebastian Cassidy, I don't know who got him. Was that you?
No.
Somebody started the bidding for him. Like, he went for a ridiculously high price.
$50. Which kicker didn't?
Well, I'm just saying, the guy, literally when we drafted, the guy's status as a kicker was questionable. You don't often see that. That should have been like a major red flag to whoever got him. I don't know. Maybe it was Ian.
Now they're hurting. Whoever it was.
But we could talk kickers all day, but we got to get on to the footballs now. And no better place to start than in Pittsburgh, where Pittsburgh just ran over Minnesota. A game time surprise that Sam Bradford did not start. Jim, but you watched a little bit of this game. What did you kind of
I didn't have a whole lot to say about it. Mainly because Sam Bradford didn't play. I discount this game because you played Case Keenum.
Yeah, they played Case Keenum was their starter that
game. Just all the noises. So I don't really have a whole lot to say. Defense, I know they had some defensive starters that were questionable. So I don't have too much to take away from this game. Pittsburgh looked good, but they were playing against a backup at best quarterback. So that had a quarterback rating of 24.7. Not too much for me.
The biggest thing to me was that the Vikings defense, for being out on the field as often as it was, played their ass off. They were able to man up on Martavis Bryant and Antonio Brown. And if I remember correctly, Ben Roethlisberger only had about 39 or so yards in the first half alone. Yeah, they were up two scores, but it was thanks to a short field and penalties and stuff like that, because the Vikings defense killed themselves on penalties all day. And that was really the biggest turning point in the game, because there was a deep bomb to Antonio Brown in the first half that allowed them to drive most of the way downfield as, I think, a 49-yard penalty. That was really the story of the game, was the Vikings defense on penalty or pass interference and holdings, because they were trying to man up Xavier Rhodes on Antonio Brown and Terrence Newman on Martavis Bryant. So, the score looks lopsided, but you dig into the stats, and it was a much closer game than it could have been.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I would also add Xavier Rhodes was not 100% healthy, and anybody who picked the Vikings before the game and knew and had time to change their pick, you were changing your pick to the Steelers, obviously, after the Sam Bradford news came out. I mean,
Absolutely. That was a huge loss for that offense, because he played his ass off and he was lights out against New Orleans. And that everybody knew as soon as he was out, that offense was nowhere near the same.
Yeah, they were going to lose the football game. Everybody knew they were going to lose that football game as soon as Sam Bradford went out. And you know that the Vikings defense cannot carry them to a victory against that top five Pittsburgh offense with Ben Roethlisberger and Le'Veon Bell. There's no way. There's just no way.
Well, and that defense was excellent, too, for the Steelers. They played very, very well.
Yeah.
They played well. They got a lot of pressure on Case Keenum, but the Vikings' offensive line is questionable.
I would agree with you, but I would say hold the brakes because that was Case Keenum. I don't think we saw the Vikings' defense that we saw against the Saints. Vikings' offense. Yeah. It just wasn't the same.
The biggest thing to come out of that game, though, is that injury to T.J. Watt and how long he might be hampered, too. They said it was a low-grade groin strain, so he's questionable to face the Chicago Bears this week in Chicago. And that'll be a huge loss. Yes, they bring in James Harrison, but the biggest thing is they need that youth. And T.J. Watt's an athlete. He's not just a pass rusher. That first week he saw he could drop into zone coverage because he's athletic enough to be able to do that.
Well, I'm not worried about that. After what I just saw last week in the Bears. Yeah, I'm not worried about the Bears.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not worried about them losing T.J. Watt against the Bears, but just over the long term is hopefully he can get healthy again because the Steelers need that athlete that they got in him.
All right.
Moving on to Chris's team, the Atlanta Falcons, who played in their brand new stadium on Sunday night, playing against the Green Bay Packers and winning the game. I believe it was 34-24, I want to say. 34-23. Chris, your thoughts on this game?
I would say I was impressed with the Falcons, but I was starting to get a little worried in that third quarter. They were up 34-13?
Yes. And no, 34-10 at one point.
34-10, yeah. And then they gave up 16 points, consecutive points. And
13 consecutive points in the fourth quarter.
Okay, 13 points, yeah. I just started getting worried, especially when they had about 7 minutes. It was 34-23 with 7 minutes left in the fourth quarter. It looked like it was going to be another choke game. I mean, it did to me. But what I would take away from this game is Steve Sarkisian is a better play caller than what I thought he was going to be in his first season. I know but you also have to say it's the Green Bay defense. The Green Bay defense is absolute garbage. It was overrated going into this game. We all knew the Seahawks offensive line it stinks. It was bad. Like I said with the Pittsburgh Steelers, I'd pump the brakes, but it was impressive. Great play calling by Steve Sarkisian. He got Julio Jones in the game more, as we all figured he would, after Dan Quinn came out and said Julio just wasn't getting enough receptions or targets, I should say. And yeah, the run game for the Atlanta was very good. So I was impressed. But yeah, I would say hold the brakes.
Yeah, you stole my point. I was incredibly impressed with how well Devontae Freeman ran. I thought that it was one of the best performances of his career. He looked so fast, and on that new turf they got, that offense just when I saw it live, and then I heard it from some of the analysts earlier in the week, that turf just makes them a much faster team. And I really liked the way they utilized Taylor Gabriel kind of down by the goal line, giving him some sweeps. I liked the way that this offense worked. I liked the way that they used Hooper, the tight end. I wish they would use him more because I think he's a really underrated part of this offense. I'm a big fan of his, and I think that I'm not worried about the the Falcons at all. They got a tough matchup going into Detroit, which I'm very – we'll talk about that matchup more on Friday. I'm very torn on that game. But if they – me, I think they're for real, and I think we should consider them the best team in the NFC at the moment right now.
Absolutely. I had them as my top team in the NFC going into this year. I think the biggest thing that we really saw, too, was Julio Jones got involved early in the game. He had 9 targets, 5 receptions. But the biggest thing we saw is I think the biggest thing you got to remember, too, is with Sarkisian coming in, he did say earlier in the week that he was still running the Falcons playbook from last year, but he was mixing in more of his verbiage. So it may have been that first week of just kind of getting the kinks worked out, kind of figuring out how they wanted to run it. And I think the other thing is Sarkisian needed to realize what he had. He kind of had to get used to all of his players because in preseason we really don't see the starters all that much. So we got to see Tevin Coleman. I like the little short route that he had for the touchdown on a receiving touchdown, which was beautiful. You really got a good mix of Tevin Coleman, Devonta Freeman, Sanu, Hardy, all those guys had receptions, which is great because on that field, like you guys said, they are going to be much faster. Most teams on turf are.
Any other points about this game?
The Falcons have to be the top team for almost everyone at this point. They look like the Falcons from last year. That's really it.
Yeah, you have to consider them top 5 at worst. I've seen them ranked as the number 1 team in football, and I would not necessarily disagree with that. But let's go on to another team. Or let's go on to another game. Well, you got something to say?
One game that really surprised me was the Cowboys and the Broncos. I expected that to be much closer than it was. The fact that it was a 42-17 at the end, I was surprised the Cowboys couldn't get more going like they did the week before. Broncos are a better defense, but was there something you had, Eric?
Yeah. I have quite a bit on this game. I'm a big Denver Broncos fan. It was very exciting to see the way the Broncos played on Sunday. To your point, let's start with Ezekiel Elliott. He had probably the worst game of his career thus far, only 8 yards. That Denver running defense last year was their weakness on defense. This year, it's their absolute strength. They manhandled that offensive line on running plays, and they stacked the box on Elliott. And they basically called out Dak Prescott as a game manager. And Chris, you won. I see your point. Because against a good defense like Denver, Dak Prescott was absolutely a game manager. He wasn't a top 10 quarterback. And he hasn't shown me that he's a top 10 quarterback in the past 2 weeks. So you win. I totally agree with you. Dak Prescott is a game manager. And until he starts making plays like he did last year again, I'm not going to change my mind on that.
Right. In this game, I would say that Dallas did not show up. The offensive line did not show up. Because they just... I just don't believe there's any way that Dallas is, or Denver's defense is that good. I mean, Dallas's offensive line has been manhandling everybody.
Why don't you think Denver's defense is that good? Because I just don't see how
They shut down
Melvin Gordon in week 1. How much more do you need to see? Like they've shut down 2 of the league's top 5 backs arguably in the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, but I've seen Dallas run on the Seattle defense, which we know is up there with the Denver defense.
Well, maybe
you had Zeke Elliott for 9 carries for 8 yards. It just doesn't happen.
Well,
it looks like it's a recipe for the fact that they didn't show up. Talking about the Dallas Cowboys offensive line.
Notice what you just said, Chris. The biggest thing is Zeke Elliott only had 9 carries. the biggest thing is this game got away from Dallas early and often because their defense doesn't have the playmakers. They looked good against New York Giants in week one, but the biggest reason is we know that the Giants' offensive line is trash. Denver got out to an early lead, which takes away from Dallas' game plan. If Dallas cannot keep the game close, they are done for that game. Because I don't think Prescott is a game manager, but they also don't have a whole lot of weapons that are explosive. You have Bryant, who can catch a ball when it's near him. You've got the same with Jason Witten, but you don't have these explosive receivers like an Emmanuel Sanders, like a Demaryius Thomas. You don't have that speed on the offense. They've got to control the clock and keep the ball in their hands and keep the game close. They're not going to win a lot of their games 34-10, 34-13, because, yeah, they have the offense when they can run the ball and do what they want. But when they fall behind, they just don't have the weapons to play a shootout game like we saw last year in the playoffs versus Green Bay. They started to come back, but we also know what Green Bay's defense is.
Right. Well, I would say that Dak Prescott has to play. If the Dallas Cowboys are going to win consistently, Dak Prescott has to be basically perfect. You can't have 50 attempts, to 50 pass attempts. You just can't. That's not the Dallas Cowboys. They don't, like you said, they don't have the playmakers on offense. You have Ezekiel Elliott, but Ezekiel Elliott, he needs to have 100 yards a game. Or I just don't see the Dallas Cowboys scoring points, and then their defense is just terrible.
Well, exactly. That's why you need the 20 attempts, 100 yards out of Ezekiel Elliott, is because of that defense, not because of Prescott. He can throw 50 times a game, but if you are, it's not him that's killing you, it's your defense. He's an accurate passer. He had two interceptions, but he looked good out there. It was more the fact that the game got away from the Dallas. That was it.
Let's move on to we've covered Dallas a lot, which is surprising for a team that lost this game. And maybe you guys have more to say on this, maybe you don't. But one point I'd like to get out there before we moved on is, like, people aren't talking about him because, yes, I get it, it's the Dallas defense, but the Broncos offense was the best it has been since Peyton Manning was Peyton Manning in 2014, the year I have not seen that offense move the ball that effectively since Peyton Manning played what I consider his final game as a good quarterback against the Colts in the divisional round a few years back.
Right. Well, for the Denver Broncos, for me, it's the fact that right now I'm going to say they're legit. They look legit. I don't care if it was the Dallas defense or not. You put up 42 points. You put up that kind of blowout, then you're a legit team. You just don't blow somebody out of nowhere.
Especially a team that's looking to be in the playoffs like Dallas.
Yeah.
Trevor Siemian looked really good. Denver, I mean, for the score, you'd think that they put up more yardage with 380 total offensive yards. But Trevor Siemian looked accurate. He was able to make some really good throws at where he thread the needle. He was able to make perfect throws to his receivers. And that's something that we haven't, like you said, Eric, we haven't seen. Those wide receivers and tight ends haven't been enabled over the last couple of years, and they're starting to look like it now.
Well, also, Denver's running game was extremely good yesterday. CJ Anderson looked really good.
That's the first time he's looked that good in a long time, too.
Yeah,
just as a Broncos fan, to defend CJ Anderson and make the largest point here that we haven't gotten to yet before we close this game out, CJ Anderson last year before he got hurt also looked like one of the best running backs in the league. Jamal Charles, is for as many knee problems as he has, he is a fantastic for how the Broncos use him, which is as a third down back when they need some quick yardage or just to give C.J. Anderson a quick rest. Every time he touches the ball, he makes an explosive play happen. And he looks like he hasn't lost a step, and I'm really happy about that because if you can have that, it opens up so much for Trevor Siemian. But the biggest thing is the offensive line. Like, I get that it's Dallas's pass rush, but Dallas's pass rush was able to demolish the Giants' offensive line, which was at the same level as the Broncos' offensive line last year.
That's
what I'm saying. It was last year, which means to me, I wanted to see John Elway. People were like, oh, you guys, what's a quarterback situation? I didn't really care about the quarterback situation. I wanted to see John Elway go out and improve the offensive line. And the biggest two additions are Garrett Bowles, who, thank God, people thought as soon as he went down, the first thing I thought was ACL or leg break. And the way he reacted to that injury. Today, Vance Joseph confirmed it's a bone bruise, which still sounds absolutely terrible. And, like, I don't know how I would deal with a bone bruise. I didn't even know those existed.
Mm-hmm.
But he's week to week, which means he could miss this week against Buffalo, but who cares? But they could get him back for the game against the Raiders. And that's incredibly crucial.
I'm looking at a report here. They're saying he's going to miss a couple of weeks, so he'll probably miss that Raiders game. He might come out the week after. But the fact that it's not an Achilles, the fact that it wasn't an Achilles injury is huge because they need him. Especially since he's 25, they need him to perform now.
Yeah, it started as an ACL, then it went to Achilles, then it went to high ankle sprain, and the fact that it was only this, they are incredibly lucky. But the one move that is very underrated, former Cowboys guard Ronald Leary. Elway signed him. He was kind of an under-the-radar signing. He has looked excellent for the Denver defense. He's provided a security blanket for Menelik Watson, who continued to get beat. That is the one position, the right tackle position. If Garrett Bowles was to end his season, that line would once again into the depths of the league because Watson is not – a serviceable tackle. The only touchdown of the day was from a fumble that landed Dallas with incredibly good field position, but that was because Menelik Watson basically let DeMarcus Lawrence run right past him and strip sack Trevor Siemian. And
I would say they could hold off even if you had two or three offensive linemen injured. You're still going to beat the Buffalo Bills. I mean, I'm not worried about this.
I think that line is very thin. But that all aside, it was a great win for the Broncos. We've spent way too much time on this game. Moving on to our next game, Philadelphia and Kansas City. I watched this game. The score, very close at the end. This was probably the most competitive game I watched all day. It was really a return to reality. For quite a few reasons, Alex Smith went back to looking kind of like Alex Smith, which is a serviceable starting quarterback, but that takes like one or two deep shots a game. What's most impressive to me, though, and the reason I think the Chiefs are different this year is, John, I'll let you gush over him some more, but Kareem Hunt. I mean, the guy is an absolute monster. And if I had to choose right now, he'd be the rookie of the year. No doubt. Hands down. I get that it's only 2 weeks through, but I think he's going to keep performing like this week in and week out. He showed all different kinds of aspects of a running game. He had a fantastic screenplay that he took for about 30 yards. He was great in the blocking game. He took one to the house where it was a slasher type move where he found the hole and ran it about 50 yards. And then he had one of those power runs where he basically dragged about 12 guys, including his own player, to the end zone to score the final touchdown for the Chiefs. It was incredibly impressive for Hunt. I just can't say enough about the guy.
Oh, absolutely. He's been – a lot of people missed him because he was in Toledo. He was never a high-priority guy for people to watch, but I'm glad that they're getting the exposure to him now. He's just such a strong fast, elusive guy. He doesn't look it right away, but he has that ability to use his burst and acceleration to just take away. I think something, too, that besides how you say Alex Smith looked kind of mediocre this game, but the biggest thing, too, is Philly has a very strong front seven. The fact that they were able to contain Kansas City to 27 points was a surprise because they had lost Ronald Darby, their star corner that they had picked up in the offseason, or actually preseason. But they were that front seven means they don't have to have an elite secondary because that pass rush gets there very, very quick. And I think that's why we saw Alex Smith kind of come back down to earth. Is the Patriots don't have that kind of pass rush that Philadelphia has. And that's the biggest thing, is Philly's defense is legit. They were able to hold almost everyone in check. If Kareem Hunt doesn't have that long 53-yard touchdown, he's at 12 carries and about 30 yards. And it just goes to show how big Kareem Hunt is for that offense.
Well, yeah, I would say... Hold on, Chris. Just quickly to add on to that. Sorry, Chris, but... this game, the score is deceptive. This game was a defensive game for the entire first half. It was incredibly impressive by both sides. At one point, Philly had four sacks on Alex Smith, but a set of downs and a set of plays where on the third down, they got a sack. Alex Smith came back out first down, they got a sack. Second down, they got a sack. They were bringing constant pressure all day. And what I was most impressed with was the Kansas City secondary doesn't miss Eric Berry at all. Like in years past, you could tell that they were missing him. And it wasn't that it looks bad in the box score for Carson Wentz. It wasn't that he was making bad throws or not finding his receivers. He was doing the smart thing. A lot of his throws that he missed were just rolling out of the pocket and throwing it away because the defense locked down the Philadelphia receivers all day long. And that's a lot to say. I know that they get a bad rep, but Torrey Smith had a few plays in the second half where he looked fantastic. Alshon Jeffrey, of course, a talent. And I really think Nelson Agholor has fixed his drought problem. I believe that these two defenses are probably top. Both of them are top five defenses in the league right now.
Yeah, I would. You basically took my point. I don't know. The Kansas City defense is still as legit as they were with Eric Berry. They're still legit without him.
Well, the biggest thing. Go ahead, Chris.
They sacked Carson Wentz six times. What? Go ahead.
The biggest thing that's going to hurt them in the long run by missing Eric Berry is against those tight ends because he always gets the Zach Ertz, the Rob Gronkowskis of the world. And Zach Ertz went 5 for 97 on 10 targets. If he catches a few more of those, he has an even bigger day, which could hurt. But the fact that they are able to keep them in check somewhat because of that pass rush.
Moving on here to Detroit and New York, the game that happened last night. I'm going to leave this one more to you guys. I just barely got to this on Game Pass. But for me, from the first half that I watched, I'm incredibly impressed with Matthew Stafford this year. He looks like the gains that he made last year. It's not just a one-year thing. And John had him when we talked about our – of course, you guys wouldn't know this because the recording got a little messed up. But when we talked about our top 10 quarterbacks list earlier before the season started, John had him in the top 10, and rightfully so. Right now, I think he is a top 10 quarterback. An argument could be made that he's in the top 5. His pocket presence has improved so much. That's what I noticed. Like, he scrambles like an Aaron Rodgers now. And also, Amir Abdullah, I'd like to know your guys' thoughts on him because from what I saw in the first quarter, he looked really good in this game.
Yeah.
He did look. Go ahead, Chris.
You go ahead.
Abdullah, it's hard to really buy into him because I've seen him have a good game and then have three bad games. It's really hard to tell with him because he did look good early on, but he wears down fairly quickly. He had a lot of his yards on one carry, which is going to happen. Most running backs will have one or two great runs in a game to really boost their stats. But I was surprised by the whole running game by Detroit in general. The fact that they were able to win this game with more rushing yards than passing yards, they ended with 138 rushing yards versus 122 passing yards. That's not something you see anymore. It really isn't. But Ameer Abdullah was able to be effective for one of the first times in his career. He hasn't had a lot of those. But Stafford has been so improved ever since Jim Bob Cooter became their offensive coordinator. And it looks like they have a comfortable system where he's able to kind of find who he wants. He's able to make the calls he wants. And the biggest thing that the Lions added to their team this year is the rookie Kenny Golladay. He didn't make a whole lot of impact in this game, but the fact that they are able to move Golden Tate back into his natural position in the slot is huge for that team because he's a matchup nightmare when it comes to being in the slot.
Well, I would say in this game, I'm not really going to take the blue part because you basically demonstrated what I think. But I was impressed with the Detroit and Matthew Stafford against that tier New York Giants defense. Like that's what I thought was impressive. The fact that you could run for more than you passed against that defense. Words can't describe how great that is. And Nick, I'm looking forward to next week when they play Atlanta to see what happens. But as far as the New York Giants go, I have the same exact takeaways as I did last week. If Seattle doesn't have the worst offensive line, then the New York Giants does. One or the two has the absolute worst offensive line in the league. Shane Green ran for what?
I don't even think you could make a good offensive line if you combine the two. It's no. That bad between the both of them.
And I can't put all the blame on Eli Manning. I know Ben McAdoo came out and said it was bad quarterback play. No, it's bad offensive line play. I understand he had a quarterback rating of 25. He was making within 10-yard passes. But that run game was bad too. Shane Vereen, 28 yards, total yards to 62. No, that's unacceptable. Eli Manning, the average yards per attempt for the 32 attempts he made is 7.5 yards. You can't win football games like that. And I have the same exact takeaways as I did from week one to now. And they're going against they're not going against Seattle-type defenses. They're going against lower-tier defenses. You could say Detroit's middle of the road, but what they showed against that Dallas defense is just terrible. I don't see how they win 8 games. I don't.
Absolutely. That offensive line is going to kill them because they become one-dimensional automatically. You don't have to worry about the run because your inside defensive line should be able to collapse everything that they have in the middle. They don't have the talent to go outside. So the Giants automatically become a pass-first team.
Oh, and by the way, you have Eli Manning, to hijack your point here, you have Eli Manning, who is one of the worst quarterbacks in the league. People don't put that into enough perspective. They give him way too much credit. I get it. He's got the two Super Bowls. But for the past 3 years, Eli Manning has been a mediocre quarterback, and now he's starting to fall off a cliff.
Well, especially his age and the amount of hits he's taken behind those bad offensive lines definitely doesn't help him. And especially with Odell Beckham Jr. still hobbled, he's still not 100%. It only hurts that offense that much more.
I have a question for you two. And it's not really about this game, but I've been looking at their schedule and everything. Do you see 8 wins?
I originally did because I thought that defense was going to be able to get some more turnovers.
After what we've seen so far.
After what we've seen, I don't think so. Because if Dallas can handle them that way on opening night, as teams get worn down, Dallas is only going to be able to manhandle them that much more later in the season. They still have to deal with the Eagles' defensive line, which is going to damage Eli Manning that much more. And you still have the Redskins, who don't have the best defensive line, but I think it's still better than the Cowboys. So it's, I cannot see them even going 8-8 this season. I really can't.
Yeah, I was gonna say I thought they could, but then I pulled up the schedule. They have a very tough schedule. Let me just read you the next 5 weeks. They have at the Eagles next week, then they go to Tampa Bay. Then they play the Chargers at home. I get it. The Chargers haven't started out hot, but they're much better than the Giants. Then they go to Denver. I don't know how – by the way, that's a primetime game. Get New York out of a primetime spot. So like I get it. They're New York, but that's a point for another time. Then they play the Seahawks at home, and then they play the Rams at home. I could – honestly, see this team going 2-14. I think the only two winnable, like two lock games I have for them would be the 49ers and the Cardinals. Okay, maybe 4-12. 4-12 is more realistic.
Within their next 7 games, I see them pulling off some kind of miraculous win and then I can see them beating the Rams. That's it.
Well, and that's the thing, too, that that Eli gets a lot of credit for is his luck. Luck seems to follow him everywhere, especially in those two Super Bowls. He always seems to pull off the magical plays when it matters. But this year, it doesn't seem like he has a lot of it because they still have to face the Chiefs and the Raiders later this season, which is not any easier than any of those matchups you listed.
Speaking of the Magic, we are moving on to the magical city of Los Angeles, where the Rams and Redskins played on Sunday. And guess what? The Redskins offense, which looked terrible in week one, found its groove in the running game. Rob Kelly, Chris Thompson, and I believe Samaje Perine all rushed for over 60 yards in that game. And that was the difference between the week one offense and the week two offense. Kirk Cousins looks to have found his stride. And the Redskins are right back in it as a potential contender for the NFC East. Meanwhile, on the other side, Jared Goff had another good day, but not as many touchdowns, against a Redskins defense that, give him credit, is much better than the Colts. He still had a pretty serviceable day. Your guys' thoughts on Goff, and more specifically, Todd Gurley, who had his best game in a while.
It was good for Todd Gurley to finally hit that groove again. He's had days where he's been effective, but he hasn't crossed the 50 or 60-yard line in a while. He's able to pile up 88 yards on 16 carries, which, like you said, was impressive for him because he hasn't been able to, especially last year when he was facing 8-9-man boxes every single down. They've been able to spread the ball out. I was pleased with Jared Goff, but they just couldn't get enough done on offense. Their defense was the part that really surprised me in this game, that they couldn't hold back the Redskins' offense. Because one in the passing game really killed them. The highest Washington receiver had 48 yards, and that was Jordan Reed. But that run game just absolutely tore up the Rams. They couldn't stop it all day.
Yeah, my question, I didn't watch all of this game, but where was Aaron Donald in this game?
Well, you got to remember, he was there. He only had two total tackles, one solo. But you got to remember, he was in that holdout, so he wasn't getting the same kind of training that he may have usually been used to. So he's trying to get back into that game shape. I'm sure he's still in shape and is great as ever, but he needed to kind of get back into it as usual for anyone that kind of has that situation. We've seen the same with Le'Veon Bell these first couple weeks.
Well, you could say that, but without Aaron Donald, that defense, they're average. I mean, they're still not that much better with Aaron Donald, but the Washington team themselves had 229 rushing yards. They didn't do it through the passing game like Kirk Cousins has been doing over the past couple of years, because you've had the pieces, Pierre Garçon and all of them,
right?
DeSean Jackson, and this year they don't. This game they just got. I'm gonna say this. May not be fully true, but it may be the wrong wording, but their running game saved them this game, in this football game, because without that running game, what are the Washington Redskins without their rushing game in this football game?
Well, something that I find really interesting is we didn't really see a lot of Samaje Perine the first week. But this game, he had 21 carries for 67 yards. And for anyone that remembers the name, at the Combine, he was the top running back for the bench press. I want to say he did 32 or something like that, which is absolutely insane for a running back. But he's a plotter. He's a very slow guy, but he's strong. So I wonder if we'll start to see that out of the Redskins, where Perine is getting a main bulk of the carries with Rob Kelly out because of his rib cartilage injury. But do we see Perine, and then he kind of wears down defenses, and you get the speed guy in Chris Thompson, who is able to just kind of take off when you've got your twos and your threes in, or the rest of the defense is just gassed on certain plays?
Right.
Well, Chris Thompson went 3 carries for 77 yards and 2 touchdowns. That's huge. It's something that you love as a change of pace back, to be able to take that advantage of the tired defense and just take it to the house.
Yeah. Well, I would say my main takeaway from this game is we're already overrating Washington's offense. They're not back. The offense is not back. Especially when you have 39 carries for 229 rushing yards. That was their offense. Without that, Kirk Cousins passed for 179 yards. A, because he doesn't have any pieces. Or, I mean, he doesn't have this John Jackson or any of them anymore. And they're still the same old Washington Redskins that we saw in week one, in my opinion. That's my takeaway.
Absolutely. They are not much better. They just look better because of their running game, and they may rely on it more because of that.
Moving on, speaking of the same old Washington Redskins, it is definitely the same old Chargers. I mean, the move from LA to San Diego to LA has not changed the identity of this team much at all. They lost last second on a missed field goal this week. I, of course, was very high on this team. I still am. I'm not giving up hope yet. I'm going to wait till week 6 to make my final verdict on this team. But they lose in the worst ways possible. It's really sad to watch. Jay Cutler didn't look awesome in this game, but he was a serviceable quarterback. He was basically what Jay Cutler has been his entire career. Jay Ajayi wasn't super explosive in this game, but they were able to move the ball and score touchdowns. And Anthony Lynn's game plan at the end of the game was atrocious. He had time and timeouts, and he decided to take knees at the end of the game instead of trying to get the ball closer for his kicker. And at the end of the day, it's so hard to be a proponent of this team and to root for this team, because San Diego was such a great city and they left them. And then Los Angeles, they're playing in StubHub Center. It's a super cool Aura, but they're the same team. They lose last second every week, and to watch this team is heartbreaking. I can't imagine what it's like to be an actual fan.
This is just tough luck. That's what this is. It's what it's came down to. That's what their season has been. So the kicker, Koo, Young Koo. Yeah, they call him Young Koo. He's 0-2. The Chargers are not 0-2. He is 0-2. He has missed two game-winning field goals. And that has been such a heartbreaker for the Los Angeles Chargers. Now, you could say it's because of bad or poor game management, is what I would call it. But it's just tough luck. That's what it is. It doesn't mean that the Los Angeles Chargers are a bad football team. It just luck has not gone their way so far. And we can't wait to see what you have to say about that, John.
Well, we wouldn't be talking about it the same way either if Koo hits the 40-yard field goal earlier in the game, because he had not only the missed game-winning field goal, but he had a 43-yarder that he also missed. And that was something that you're not talking about bad possessions at the end of the game if he converts that first one, because then they're up 20-19 at the end of the game, and they could have kicked a field goal or even just kneed out the rest of the game at that point. But the biggest thing to me was the fact that you're giving your star running back that you seem to love 9 carries for, and he only gained 13 yards. The biggest thing is the Dolphins' defense really stepped up when it came to the run game and really made the Chargers one-dimensional. Yet it allowed Keenan Allen to have 9 catches for 100 yards. Hunter Henry got really involved this game. And they used Melvin Gordon a lot out of the backfield as a pass catcher. But when you can't set a run game early on with your main guy, that's going to hurt you all game.
Well, I would say to that, it wasn't really the Dolphins' defense. It was the Chargers. Because Koo missed 2 field goals at least. He may have missed 3.
No, he went 1 for 3. He only had the 2, and both of them were the 40-to-49-yard type.
Yeah, they were both 43 yards. I did look that up. So you easily win this game if he makes one of those field goals. Like, you can't be missing those field goals, or you have to put it on the offense to get you closer, at least closer if you're not scoring touchdowns, to, like I said, get you closer to be able to kick that field goal to win the game.
Absolutely, and Anthony Lynn is one that he's a rookie coach for this Chargers offense. It's something that he's got to get used to. He has a lot of faith in Koo, and I understand why. Even though he missed the 43-yarder, you don't want something going wrong where there's a fumble or a pick at the end of the game to completely kill your chance. You trust this young kicker, which was very hyped up going into the season. And while he had a bad game last week, he hit one earlier. He missed one. So you figure he's 50 on the day. Let's go for it. He should be able to make this. It was a very makeable field goal. You're not asking him to hit a 55-yarder. But the biggest thing is the coach had faith in his kicker, and he just couldn't convert.
Well, yeah. if you're saying, well, if anybody's going to say that Anthony Lynn's a rookie coach, it does not take a rocket scientist to realize your kicker is not playing well, obviously, or he's not kicking well. Let's get him closer. Let's get him to the 30-yard line instead of kneeling the football 3 times. It just doesn't take a rocket scientist. I can't take the rookie head coach as an excuse.
Me?
Yeah, Eric. So now that the Chargers are 0-2, how do you feel about them? They've had 2 heartbreak losses, but how do you see them playing out the rest of the season?
Let me pull up their schedule really quick. I mean, I think there's a lot to gain. The one thing while I'm pulling this up here that I wanted to say is I feel really bad for Josh Lambeau, because this Koo guy, I get it, he's a great story, but the reason they made him the starting kicker was because he made some kind of trick shot in training camp. That's not the right way to determine who your kicker's going to be. Josh Lambeau was a fan. I looked up the stat earlier because, shameless little plug here, I went on our good friend John's show to do a weekly segment that we're starting there, a place kicking report. Josh Lambeau, I looked this up, made 87% of his kicks when he was with, no, 97% of his kicks when he was with the Chargers. Like, that's where I get a little ticked off, because you cut a veteran guy to go with this rookie who had never played before, and he has cost you both your games. But John, to answer your question, they've started 0-2, and I don't think – I'm not counting them out of the playoffs just yet, but just because of the way the division has started, they're not going to win the division. I mean,
it's going to be very tough.
I'm willing to concede that. I was way too high on them in this division. I did not expect the Broncos to be as good as they were, and I did not expect the Chiefs to be as good as they are right now. So that's part of the reason why. But I don't think they're done yet. They have a very tough first six games. Their only real break in the next four games is they go to New York. But as soon as they finish with the Patriots in week 8, I believe, after that, it's all very winnable games for them. And they could – what they have to do within the next four games is win two games. Because if they don't win two games, then they're going to go 8-8. If they do, it's going to be the difference between an 8-8 team and a 10-6 team that could possibly squeak into the playoff.
Yeah, especially with 7.
Especially with two of those teams being the Chiefs and the Raiders, those are two division games you at least have to be competitive in and show yourself, because you still face the Eagles and Giants in those other two games. But to mention something, Lambeau only made 81.3% of his field goals the last 2 years, his only 2 years with San Diego. But last year, he was great from 39 or less. But from 40 to 49, he was 6 of 8, and he missed all 350-plus yard field goals last year. And that's, I think, where they kind of felt scared and why they brought in Koo, is because it's a young guy. He has a lot of upside versus Lambeau, who has kind of plateaued in a sense. So, but the Chargers definitely have to get on a roll in that late season, almost like the Chiefs did a couple years ago.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a mountain left to climb for this team. And we will leave you with that tonight. Thank you for joining us. We realize that we didn't get to all the games this week. If there's any, just a quick final note for both of you, not a whole lot of discussion on these, but did either of you have one major point that you'd like to talk about that happened in one of the games we didn't talk about? For me, very quickly, Derrick Henry for Tennessee is finally starting to see some of the carries. I think that DeMarco Murray is very quickly here going to take a back seat in that offense. And we thought that they were going to be more of an explosive passing offense. I think they're going to take the same identity they did last year, because Eric Decker Mariota hasn't looked great in the first 2 weeks, and he's still warming up. But I wouldn't expect him to really start taking shots until week 6, week 7 even.
For me, it's the Seattle Seahawks. we're still seeing the same thing we saw when they played in week 1 versus Green Bay. They slid by the San Francisco 49ers 12-9. They're playing against one of the worst defenses in the NFL, in my opinion. Not the worst, but it's the bottom 10. And it's not looking good for the Seattle Seahawks at all.
For me, it's got to be the Panthers. They've been cutting it close so far this year. Yeah, they look good against the 49ers, but 9-3 against the Bills, with Cam Newton taking a couple of shots, one where he was laying on the ground. They've got to find a way to protect him and be able to get some more offense, because that defense isn't the same that it used to be. Carolina's got to find a way to get the ball moving and get the ball into Christian McCaffrey's hands, Curtis Samuel. And we may not even see that now, with Greg Olsen being out for 8 weeks. He was officially placed on IR and had that foot surgery. So I don't know what kind of Panthers team we're going to see now. They're sitting at 2-0, but they've got a lot of work to do now.
Yeah.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, I think, yeah, McCaffrey for me has been the biggest surprise. Just the lack from the guy we saw in the preseason to who he is now. He hasn't taken a step back, but for some reason, like, he hasn't been the same guy. It's a little bit surprising.
But they're not giving him the work, though. I think with Olsen out, we will see it because they're going to use Stewart as their guy to carry the load when they're leading. With Olsen out, McCaffrey probably lines up in the slot and sees a lot more work.
I would agree with that, too.
Yeah, well, we will talk much more about the Panthers and all the other teams later in the week when we go through our preview show. For now, thank you for joining us. You can find us on Twitter at EndZonePod. We just finished our giveaway. Jordan Korolevic, young sir, thank you for listening to our show. You won the gift card. You got it. Thanks for tweeting us out and shouting us out. Hopefully this gets to you. Mr. Korolevic just wanted to give him a quick shout out. Great guy. And we hope you're doing all right, man. Anyways, follow us on Twitter at EndZonePod. You can find John at JButlerPSF, Chris at ChrisPSF, and me at Eric18Utah E. Thank you very much, guys. And we will be back later this week to talk about week 3. Peace out.
Have a good night.